ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। गुड मॉर्निंग एवरीवन, हरे कृष्णा। थैंक यू फॉर लेटिंग मी स्पीक दिस हम्बल सोल दिस फॉलन नस्करिंग। सो विल स्टार्ट बाय रिपीटिंग द वर्स रिस्पॉन्सिबली। श्रुत उवाच अभ्यर्थिस्तदा तस्मै स्थानानि कलये ददौ द्यूतं पानं स्त्रियसूना यत्राधर्मश्चतुर्विदः। सुत उवाच अभ्यर्थितस्तदा तस्मै स्थानानि कलये ददौ द्यूतं पानं स्त्रियसूना यत्राधर्मश्चतुर्विदः। सुत उवाच अभ्यर्थितस्तदा तस्मै कलये ददौ द्यूतं पानं स्त्रियसूना यत्राधर्मश्चतुर्विदः। सुत उवाच अभ्यर्थितस्तदा तस्मै स्थानानि कलये ददौ द्यूतं पानं स्त्रियसूना यत्राधर्मश्चतुर्विदः। सुत उवाच अभ्यर्थितस्तदा तस्मै स्थानानि कलये ददौ द्यूतं पानं स्त्रियसूना यत्र धर्मश्चतुर्विदः। Synonyms. Sutta vacha. Sutta Goswami said, Abhyartita. Thus being petitioned, tada, at that time, tasmai, unto him, sthanani, places, kalaye, to the personality of Kali, dadao, gave him permission, dyutam, gambling, panam, drinking, striha, illicit association with women, suna, animal slaughter. Yatra, wherever. Adharma, sinful activities. Chaturvidha, four kinds of. Translation by S.V. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Sutta Goswami said, Maharaj Parikshit, thus being petitioned by the personality of Kali, gave him permission to reside in places where gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter were performed. Purport. Maybe students can read the purport.
The basic principles of irreligiosity, such as pride, prostitution, intoxication, and falsehood, counteract the four principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. The personality of Kali was given permission to live in four places, particularly mentioned by the king, namely the place of gambling, the place of prostitution, the place of drinking, and the place of animal slaughter.
Srila Jiva Goswami directs that drinking against the principles of scriptures, such as the Sautramani Yajna, association with women outside of marriage, and killing animals against the injunctions of the scriptures are irreligious. In the Vedas, two different types of injunctions are there for the pravrittas, those who are engaged in material enjoyment, and for the nivrittas, or those who are liberated from material bondage. The Vedic injunction for the pravrittas is to gradually regulate their activities toward the path of liberation. Therefore, those who are in the lowest stage of ignorance and who indulge in wine, women, and flesh drinking by performing Sautramani Yajna associated with women by marriage and flesh eating by sacrifices are sometimes recommended. Some punctuation really going on there. Such recommendations in the Vedic literature are meant for a particular class of men and not for all. But because they are injunctions of the Vedas for particular types of persons, such activities by the pravrittas are not considered adharma. One man's food may be poisoned for others. Similarly, what is recommended for those in the mode of ignorance may be poisoned for those in the mode of goodness. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu, therefore, affirms that recommendations in the scriptures for a certain class of men are never to be considered adharma or irreligious. But such activities are factually adharma, and they are never to be encouraged. The recommendations in the scriptures are not meant for the encouragement of such adharma, but for regulating the necessary adharma gradually toward the path of dharma.
Following in the footsteps of Maharaja Pariksit, it is the duty of all executive heads of states to see that the principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, are established in the state, and that the principles of irreligion, namely pride, illicit female association or prostitution, intoxication, and falsity, are checked by all means. And to make the best use of a bad bargain, the personality of Kali might be transferred to places of gambling, drinking, prostitution, and slaughterhouses, if there are any places like that. Those who are addicted to these irreligious habits may be regulated by the injunctions of the scripture. In no circumstances should they be encouraged by any state. In other words, the state should categorically stop all sorts of gambling, drinking, prostitution, and falsity. The state, which wants to eradicate corruption by majority, may introduce the principles of religion in the following manner. 1. 2 compulsory fasting days in a month, if not more, austerity. Even from the economic point of view, such 2 fasting days in a month in the state will save tons of food, and the system will also act very favorably on the general health of the citizens. 2. There must be compulsory marriage of young boys and girls attaining 24 years of age and 16 years of age, respectively. There is no harm in coeducation in the schools and colleges, provided the boys and girls are duly married. And in case there is any intimate connection between a male and a female student, they should be married properly without illicit relation. The Divorce Act is encouraging prostitution, and this should be abolished. 3. The citizens of the state must give in charity up to 50% of their income for the purpose of creating a spiritual atmosphere in the state or in human society, both individually and collectively. They should preach the principles of Bhagavatam by A. Karma Yoga, or doing everything for the satisfaction of the Lord, B. regular hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam from authorized persons or realized souls, C. chanting of the glories of the Lord congregationally at home or at places of worship, D. rendering all kinds of service to Bhagavatas engaged by preaching Srimad Bhagavatam, and E. residing in a place where the atmosphere is saturated with God consciousness. If the state is regulated by the above process, naturally there will be God consciousness everywhere.
Gambling of all descriptions, even speculative business enterprise, is considered to be degrading, and when gambling is encouraged in the state, there is complete disappearance of truthfulness, allowing young boys and girls to remain unmarried more than the above mentioned ages, and licensing animal slaughterhouses for all descriptions should be at once prohibited. The flesh eaters may be allowed to take flesh as mentioned in the scriptures and not otherwise. Intoxication of all descriptions, even smoking cigarettes, chewing tobacco, or drinking of tea must be prohibited.
So this purport here, Srila Prabhupada, it's very interesting. Prabhupada gives these 3 points to the governments to follow. Sometimes people generally feel, oh, these spiritual people are so wishy-washy and whatever. But I feel it very inspiring that he's giving these 3 points. Like, you know, do this and it will end. Actually, Prabhupada says, if the state wants to eradicate corruption And it's funny because right now in India there's a huge movement against corruption, and these people have changed India, and these politicians are bad. But here Prabhupada is describing what the facts are of the material world and how actually there can be less corruption. So before I go further into the purport, I want to give a basic introduction to this verse, because I know some of the students are like new and they might not have covered the first canto. So in this verse, Maharaj Parikshit, who's the grandson of King Arjun, and Arjun was the friend of Krishna, and this Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to him. So right now, Maharaj Parikshit, he's the king of the whole world, and he's ruling the world. And he one day he goes, he sees this downtrodden person, Kali. It's like a black person, black and just with bad features. But he's described as a Shudra, but he's wearing the dress of a king. He's acting as a Kshatriya. I think you can relate to it in today's age. People who are not actually, they don't have the skills to become administrators and kings and all that sort, but they still wear the dress of the king. So like, it's the same mood, same person as a Shudra, he's being an administrator. And then Maharaj Parikshit sees that he's beating two individuals. One is the cow and one is the bull. The cow is the Mother Earth and the bull is the personality of religion personified. And this person, Kali, is also the personality of irreligion, like personified. So Maharaj Parikshit sees that. And then Maharaj Parikshit is ready to slay Kali with his sword, because he, as being a king, he has to make sure that every living entity is protected, including, obviously, the personality of religions and the personality of earth. So he's about to do that. But then, right at the moment, Kali, he gives off his dress and he takes shelter of king. He says, oh, please forgive me. Give me somewhere to stay. So it is at this point when Maharaj Parikshit gives him these four places to stay in, namely gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter. Wherever these things happen, Kali's, the personality, the irreligion personified, can actually stay. So that's why there's no doubt that, you know, four regulative principles are so stressed in our movement, because if you can see factually, this is where these vices of quarrel and hypocrisy, Kali, the age of Kali is also the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. So they actually reside in these four places, and they affect the people who are indulging in them, or they are related to it in many ways. So like that. And so he gives them gives him these four places to stay. And then Kali says, but in your kingdom, these places don't exist, actually. So where do I stay? So Maharaj Parikshit says, okay, so wherever there's hoarding of gold, greed, and falsity, you can stay there. And he says, so okay, so this is the deal. But then it's explained how expert an administrator the king Parikshit is. Because as soon as he gave him that place to stay, where there's greed and falsity and hoarding of gold, he collected all the gold in the kingdom and he used it for sacrifices for Krishna, for Sankirtan, for like that. And so actually, he gave him a place to stay, but he also didn't give him a place to stay. So like that, in that mood, Srila Prabhupada is writing the purport that, for the government especially, that if you want to fight Kali, then you have to follow these steps. And then even though there are these places for him, but if you manage properly with God consciousness, actually then Kali won't be able to dig his roots further. This corruption, quarrel, wars, and all this won't actually have deeper roots. So this is the background, how Kali came and what Maharaj Parikshit, why he gave them four places. And then, so going back to the purport now. So did anyone notice the two kinds of people, or it's mentioned in the purport, the two, can someone, maybe Trishta shaking his head. So. Yeah, pravritti and nivritti. What does that mean in English? Are you going to use the mic?
So pravritti people are those who want to gradually progress and at the same time enjoy the senses, at the same time gradually progress towards liberation. So they're encouraged to allow certain liberties according to the Shastra. Nivritti are those who want to completely give up sense enjoyment altogether and take to spiritual life completely.
Yeah, so as you said, the pravrittas are those people who want to have sense enjoyment. And the nivrittas are those who are detached. They want to follow the path of renunciation. And actually, in a lecture, Srila Prabhupada explains the categories of people. So this purport covers the whole range of society. It covers wide range. It covers the lowest of the lowest, like really they're into sense enjoyment and they just want to enjoy. And it's described in the 16th chapter how this is the demoniac tendency. You can say that it's like the definition of demoniac tendency about when they see that religion is irreligion, irreligion is religion. When they confuse everything, they want to do everything, and they're not able to discriminate, and so they're like, oh well, everything goes, and they can do it. There's a poor fund of knowledge, so that will be the lowest categories of the demoniac section, and then going slightly above, there are the karmis or the materialists who have this strong urge for sense enjoyment, but they follow some spiritual injunctions. They follow, so this is how you go about it, essentially regulating their life about using scriptures or learned people, taking advice, counseling from the priestly class or from more advanced spiritual people. So that's going above slightly. That's the materialists or the karmis, which you can say that who follow karmakanda, but they still have strong desires. And they might have desires to go to heavenly planets. They might not necessarily want to go back to Godhead. They still have all these desires. And it's interesting because in India, astrology is so famous. And this year, when I went to India, my uncle took me to the Shaivite astrologer. And he said, yes, 2013 is full of struggles for you. So there is one puja you can do. Only 5,000 rupees. And he said, you give me 5,000 rupees, I'll go to Chennai, I'll do the puja. That's it. All your troubles will go away. And that's actually the mood of the materialist, the karmis, that, yes, I will please this demigod, I'll do this, I'll do this puja. And then my problems, the threefold miseries of this world, which are essentially miseries from the mind, miseries from other people, and miseries due to the natural calamities or natural causes. So these three problems, everyone wants to mitigate these problems, actually, in the material world. And so the materialist thinks, if I do this, and if I do this, if I manage this like this and like this, then I can get rid of these material problems. So this is their level. And the Shaivite went on to explain that, oh, your actual Lord is Lord Shiva and Lord Parvati. You should worship them. And my uncle said, yes, you have some sentiment for Krishna, but sometimes you should worship Shiva and Parvati. I was like, okay, whatever. So these are the pravrittas. And then you go beyond further. Then there are those people who want to give up everything. They see the futility of this world, who sometimes have existential crises, and they think, oh, this world is so useless, because in the end you die, and then all you have done is this pretty much a waste. And so they want to renounce everything. It's like, it's a very impersonalist mood. So the impersonalist people who want to negate everything. So this is the third group. And then finally, there are the devotees. So the devotees, they have a very balanced approach towards everything. Like the topic says, attachment and detachment, the Vedic philosophies. So the devotees, they want to use attachment or renunciation in different time, place, and circumstances for the use of Krishna. They will see, oh, does this fit over here or does this fit over here? Like, there are so many examples of Srila Prabhupada, being attached to having a huge land or having a huge temple. It was for Krishna. He was, for example, the example which comes to my mind is when Srila Prabhupada was fighting for the land in Bombay. And there was this person who was cheating the devotees, but he had a strong, strong clout with lawyers and politicians. And people were suggesting Srila Prabhupada, oh, give up this land, it's too much, this person is too big, it's too much, he's too crooked, just leave it. But Srila Prabhupada was very heavy, and he said, no, in a sense, he was attached for Krishna. He really wanted that land for Krishna, because the deities were there already. So he really wanted that land. So in that sense, he used his vigor, he used his enthusiasm for Krishna. And but in India, sometimes there's this impersonalist vibe. Like people, they appreciate these so-called sadhus who say, "Oh, I don't want the money." It's like, "Oh, just, you know, it's all about God. I don't want the money." Like this, like my uncle would always say that when he goes to the ISKCON temples. There's an ISKCON temple in my hometown. My uncle goes there, and so the ISKCON devotees ask for money to build a huge temple. They are trying to build a huge temple by 2020, and so every time he goes, more, you know, somewhere in the conversation it comes up, you know, if you're building a temple, you know, just please donate some. You have some money, please donate some money. And he gets egged, like, "Oh, why do you have to ask about money all the time? You are spiritual people. Don't ask about money." And then he goes to these Shaivites, astrologers, and then he goes to their, you know, their room where they have their deities, and he gives like 20 rupees, and they're like, "Oh yeah, okay, we don't care how much you give." And then they ask for 5,000 rupees for the puja. So he thinks that these ISKCON devotees, oh, they ask for money all the time, and these Shaivites, oh, they don't ask for money, they're actually spiritual people. But in reality, these are impersonalists. For them, they're trying to negate everything. Whereas the devotees, they're trying to engage, like Srila Prabhupada said, you know, I'll take the millions of dollars, you know, I'll spend it that very day and then come back again to you and ask for another million of dollars. So that's the mood of the devotees. They don't want to negate everything, but they want to use everything for Krishna. So, so in the purport, Srila Prabhupada covers all these people, and he gives a very broad vision for the government, for the society, what can be done for these people from the lowest to the highest. And as a matter of fact, we lie, you know, somewhere or there, somewhere, sometimes we act impersonally, you know, so we have impersonalist tendencies. Sometimes we are really devotional. Sometimes we are into sense gratification. I really want that. But the point is, at whatever stage you are, if you have a balanced approach towards, like, oh, okay, this is my situation, and what can I do which will be favorable in my situation, what will be favorable for my Krishna consciousness, that is a very balanced approach towards Krishna consciousness, like a devotional approach. Like how in the Nectar of Devotion, the definition of pure devotion is that you should serve Krishna favorably. So in that mood, that what is favorable for me, there's one story of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. He would, in his biography, it's described that he would wake up at 2 a.m. and finish all his rounds before Mangalati, and he would do 32 rounds, and throughout the day, he would eat only once, just like some, and not even much, like just once. So there was a devotee, he thought, oh, maybe I should do the same, I should also do this, you know. So he started doing that for a few days. He was traveling with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. And he started, you know, waking up 2 a.m., doing all his rounds in the morning, eating once a day. And he did it for 3 days. And the fourth day, he collapsed, just fainted. And then Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, you know, he kind of hinted, it's okay, you don't have to, like, do it. So for different devotees, different people in their lives, they'll be at different stages. And by the process of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, which is the spiritual master, the scriptures, and the spiritual, I would say the mentors, you can take decisions. Okay, how do I increase my Krishna consciousness in a proper way? So, and then, I wanted to ask a question about, can someone give a nice example where they have used attachments or they have used renunciation for Krishna? And someone like to speak? I'll just speak for myself first so that you have some time to think. I was thinking about attachments. As Kalagan Prabhu said this morning, I'm really attached, so I use everything. So as a kid, I always liked singing for some reason. And so when I came to the Hare Krishna movement, whoa, it was all about singing. And so I thought, oh, I should lead kirtans more. And I noticed that people who know harmonium lead kirtans a lot more than who don't. So that was like a an impetus for me to learn harmonium. So almost like a material desire that I learn harmonium, then I'll get to sing more and to lead more. So and then I started doing that. I started learning harmonium, and now and actually I did, you know, I did get to lead more all the time. So, but slowly it dawned upon me that oh, actually, when I, especially when I went on the Mexico bus tour, I'd see these devotees who would just sing for the deity, they would just sing for Krishna, and they wouldn't care if there's someone, is that person listening, is that person dancing or not, you know, how the crowd is being affected. So I was really inspired by that. Oh, actually, they're really singing for Krishna. So in that way, I did have attachment, but somehow or the other, it was slowly dovetailed in Krishna's service, and then I'm slowly growing towards, oh, I should sing for Krishna, I should sing to spread the Sankirtan movement, and so on like that. So that was the attachment side. And then for renunciation, I was thinking, well, I really don't like waking up in the morning, so I'm renouncing some of my rest or sleep in that sense. And one big decision I had to take this year was to move back into Krishna's, which is kind of renouncing my independence, because living over there, I could come for the prasadam, but I didn't have to attend the morning program. It's just across the street. It's such a good situation. You know, it's like everything, you have everything. But I knew that if I move back in and if I become steady and, you know, attend a morning program like that and be in close association, like tight association with my fellow devotees, and it will be nicer. So it was a tough decision for a day. And then but I said, okay, it's okay. I should move in. It should be very nice. And it was very nice because now I moved in and I have a very nice roommate, Nimai Pandit Das Prabhu. He's such a mode of goodness roommate. Like, I think I'll never get a roommate like him. So Krishna reciprocated in that. And he made me very easy for me to move back and study, do my services for him, you know, keep my studies decently and continue like that. So this was my example of attachment and renunciation. So can someone else share about their personal, you know, when they're, yeah, Mike.
I've been playing music since I was 8 years old, and every instrument I've ever seen, I was always thinking, wow, I'd really like to try that and play that. So I feel very lucky that we have so many different instruments that we use in kirtan and can be used to glorify Krishna. So my attachment for playing so many instruments and always trying to play music is very nicely engaged in Krishna consciousness. And when I first started, about renunciation, when I first started coming to Krishna House, I was living on my own, and I was living with some roommates, and you know, we were like partying all the time, being intoxicated, eating meat, and doing so many things. But as I started chanting and realizing actually these things weren't making me happy, gradually I gave them up, and I was taking the austerity of riding my bike at 3:30 in the morning to come to the morning program, and it really solidified that this is Krishna consciousness is really something I want to do, even if I have to wake up at 3:30 and ride my bike for an hour. So,
for attachment, growing up, my mother had me in martial arts from a really young age, so I really identified with that whole hobby, that whole activity. And coming to the devotees, seeing the Bhagavad Gita, I was also inspired. Yeah, battlefield. Yeah. But I really didn't find a place to, to fight. You know, there was no big competitions anymore, no you know, tournaments or anything. So it wasn't really much use for it, but I had this big attachment for it. So I was encouraged to teach the kids at the charter school out in Alachua, and I got to do that for about a year, was really nice. So that was kind of like a dovetailing of that activity. Although we had the martial arts class in the cafeteria, so it was more like food fighting than any kind of martial arts. But it was nice. From detachment or austerity, I remember I got the opportunity to do a really nice service traveling with my Guru Maharaj. And I was thinking, you know, I'm probably not going to be able to take a warm shower every morning, and I really don't like cold showers, so I'm going to start practicing taking cold showers before I go to do the service. So I had like a month and a half before I was getting ready to leave for the service, and every morning I was taking a cold shower, and it was just, every morning with a cold shower. And then when I ended up going on the trip, every place we went, we had hot water, so...
Anyone else? You can speak just about one of them, attachment or renunciation.
You know, Prabhupada talks about how they don't indulge in going to the cinema and whatnot. And my whole entire life was watching movies and growing up in front of the television. I'll still talk about it, and nobody really entertains that. So it's kind of hard because I studied film, and I used to use, you know, like instances in films, like, you know, scenarios in films as a way to, you know, kind of relate to people and be like, well, do you remember this part in this movie? Well, this is what this character does and whatnot. And I didn't watch a movie for like an entire year, and that was like really hard for me, you know, because I had Netflix and I was like, oh yeah, this, you know, crazy foreign movie from the 50s, oh man, I really want to watch that, you know. And now it's just like, you know, to do that would just be taking away from the time that I could be reading the Vedas and Prabhupada's books. So that was, it was really hard for me to distance from that, but I was able to do it.
I've always, since I was little, I always liked two things I was really attached to: organization and creativity. So I'm artistic, but I also like things when they're organized. So I found the perfect balance when I used to dress my deities at home. And I took that on, like nobody else in my house would do it except for me since I was like little. And it's funny to see the pictures of when I used to dress them and like more recently, like, you know, they're backwards and they're, you know, but, It was really a nice way to just absorb that, and like, you know, you're really organized, but you can also use your creativity, so it's fun.
Mike?
I guess I was pretty attached to performing, you know, like playing music, but not just like alone for myself, but for like in front of a crowd, or, you know, just like performing for people, and it gave me a lot of satisfaction, just because it was like there's something different about it. It was like there's really a release when you could like put your art, put your like emotions out in front of people, and see like immediate response, you know, and like sort of like a reciprocation, it's like making art and then seeing the results immediately, you know. But since I've come to Krishna consciousness, you know, there's in some ways there's not really opportunities to do that, but there's so many too. And I mean, beyond that, I get to perform for the deities, which is like such a wonderful thing, you know. And I'm like sort of warming up to that, and like accepting that as a really powerful reciprocation. So there's that. And I guess for renunciation, I've always been really independent, and like nobody can tell me what to do. You know, I'm always gonna do my own thing, and you know, I just like, I can't stand being tied down. You know, I just like traveling, just having the opportunity to do anything on any given day. That was like, I don't know, that was my motto or whatever. But I mean, moving in here, it's really so regulated and so strict, and like I've really gotta like find some discipline, you know, and like stick to a routine, which is like pretty, I mean, at first it was difficult, but it's really been powerful thing in my life. So
Chaitanya, what's
it? When I came to Krishna consciousness, Vallabhasin and I had talked about, you know, when we got together, like, that we wouldn't fall down into sex life at all. And I was 21 years old, so that was kind of like, I always kind of had it in the back of my head that maybe someday, you know, like, it's possible, you know, like, but, you know, we'll see, you know. So, like, the first probably 6 years of my devotional life, I had that, like, in my head. But I thought, you know, I really love, you know, association of kids and stuff like that, you know. But I thought, you know, for a higher purpose, because Valbasain is so fixed up and always, you know, preaching strongly at me. And I always think, oh, yeah, you know, like I should put all my engagement into Sankirtan and devotional service and, you know, do it, you know. So I found that from doing that renunciation in Hawaii, when I lived there, there was like 25, 30 kids that were always at my house. Then in Denver, we had like a Krishna house before I knew about Krishna houses. There's 15 of them that lived with us for a while. And then like coming to Krishna house, I have 30, you know. So it's like you think, oh, there, Krishna knows in your heart, you know, everything. You become purified, but at the same time, he facilitates your desires too. You're not the loser for it. So I find that, you know, it's very relishable that Krishna is always put me in the association of so many nice young devotees that enliven me every day. So thank you, Prabhu.
Yeah. So this is the vision of a devotee, that a devotee doesn't think about himself. He tries to see that this whole drama is about Krishna, actually. He is in the center. And this is all about Krishna. The materialist thinks, this is the funny thing about both the materialists, the pravrittas and the nimrittas, the materialists and the impersonalists, that the materialist might think, oh, this is about me and I'll have lots of sense enjoyment. The impersonalist thinks, I'll give up because it's all about me. But the devotee says, oh, it's all about Krishna. So in that sense, he can use the resources or he can refuse certain things in Krishna's service. And as Mati said, that's very important, that since she was so attached, you know, Krishna was the goal, she could do anything. She could renounce her other devotees, they could, you know, raise a family or whatever. They can do anything in their service because the goal is Krishna. And I was thinking of a personal example about when I was arranging Dhruta Karma Prabhu's event. In general, I get, that was a funny thing when my astrologer said, the first thing he said about me was, you get angry very, very easily. Like, you have a pulse, then it goes down. But in the moment, you get angry. So I have that anger inside me. And I always think, how can I use this for Krishna, this force, this, you know, this enthusiasm? So sometimes holding events like for Dhruta Karma Prabhu or this other events, it's kind of an avenue to be passionate and like arrange this event and manage and everything. So that was for me, that when Dhruta Karma Prabhu's event was happening and I was trying to think, oh well, you know, this is Krishna's program, so there should be prasadam and it should happen properly and I should dress nicely because I'm going to introduce Dhruta Karma Prabhu. So I was trying to have a mood where, oh, this is actually all about Krishna, and that is the vision of a devotee. He's not bothered about himself. He's more bothered about Krishna, and it doesn't matter how others perceive him. And there's one more thing I want to touch upon. It's about when we are new to Krishna consciousness. I think this was Ananda Seva told me that. This mentioned this, we were discussing this once, that when we are new, sometimes we think the people who are newer, oh, they're fallen. And then people who are more advanced than us, oh, I don't know, maybe they're impersonalists or they're faking it. Like, that's like the neophyte vision of, I'm just talking about myself, so I'm not pointing out. I'm just saying that when we see, like, you know, less advanced people, oh, they're fallen. Higher, who are more advanced, oh, maybe they're impersonal and they're just burning themselves out, whatever. So that is sometimes that mind tricks us. And then we think, oh, actually, I'm Madhyam Adhikari. I'm discriminating. Actually, that's not true. Most of the times we are neophyte when we are too critical about anyone else in general. And this stems out of this mood of thinking that, oh, I'm in the center and like this. But when you give the benefit to the other person or other, you know, that, oh, maybe this devotee really has that mood of serving Krishna and they're doing it, And in general, I've seen that devotees come from two sides. Either they come from the pravritta side or the nivritti side. Like either they're kind of more inclined towards renunciation, or more inclined towards attachment or using things for Krishna. And at one point it converges, and then they see, oh, actually everyone is trying to serve Krishna to the best of their ability. And they might, some people might be more renounced, some people might be engaged in administration or, studies, academics, whatever. But actually Krishna is the center. And this is the glory of Srila Prabhupada. And then it comes out in this, I feel it comes out in the purport, and how he's saying that everyone can be engaged in Krishna consciousness from wherever they are. They might be the nivrittas, which actually Prabhupada says nivrittas are those who are liberated from material bondage, and pravrittas are those who are engaged in material enjoyment. They can do Krishna service to Krishna, and the government can implement this, and government can regulate people, and some people might be irked by it, but in general, it will create more God consciousness, and it's not just about, this life, and then in the end, I'll go back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada is actually giving a whole full solution for the whole world, how this world will be peaceful, how there will be growth, and how everyone will be peaceful. And I was reading in the third canto, and in one of the purports, Srila Prabhupada was describing that when you become a devotee, it doesn't mean the threefold miseries will just go away, that there won't be someone who won't bug you, push your buttons. There will still be someone who will push your buttons even though you are chanting your 16 rounds. And, there will still be natural calamities. Your relatives will die, and all these things will happen, actually. But then Srila Prabhupada explains that the devotee is not affected. That is spiritual life, actually. People think, oh, no, I'll give up everything, then I won't be affected. Or people think, oh, I'll have everything. But this is spiritual life, when you see the reality of things, that Krishna is in the center, and then nothing affects you, because you're grounded. You're grounded in your constitutional position. And which brings me to the verse by Lord Chaitanya, when he says that I'm that servant of the servant verse. That I'm not a Brahmana, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaishya or a Shudra. Nor am I a Brahmachari, a householder, a Vanaprastha or a Sannyasi. I identify myself only as a servant of the servant of the servant of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. So I was thinking there was no purport to the verse, but I was thinking how Lord Chaitanya is doing two things. Firstly, he's saying that I'm not this situation, I'm not this circumstance. Maybe I'm in this Indian body, or I have more inclinations as a Kshatriya or a Brahmin, or householder or Vanaprastha or Sannyasi or Brahmachari. Maybe I have these inclinations due to at this point in time. But actually, I'm not that, and I'm the servant of Krishna. So he's saying that actually I'm not this, and actually I'm this. So we have to see both things. And this is what I strongly feel, that we have to see not just the servant of servant, but we have to also see that actually I'm separate from the situation, and that's why I'm, because I am the servant of Krishna. So, like that. I thought you raised your hand.
Use energy in ways you usually don't. I heard you said something about they weren't going to allow you to serve prasadam out there. So what did you do?
Oh, well. And I got mad. Well, yeah, they said they didn't allow us to, they were not allowing us to serve prasadam. And I was angry, because just a month ago, they allowed an Indian group to serve a food from outside, and I got angry, and I was really angry. Why are they not letting us serve prasadam? Srila Prabhupada said that any program, we should have prasadam. And I knew it will be a good thing, because we had already advertised for the food, and secondly, it will attract a lot more people. So, well then, I was getting way too angry. The Kalakant Prabhu, I think he balanced me more. Like, okay, call them and talk to them.
demons.
In general, I was really passionate about that this program should happen nicely. And the good thing was, it's not that I did it, but since I was, there was the mood of like, oh, this program should happen for Krishna. Dutta Karmaprabhu is coming all the way from, you know, he gives this presentation all the time. This is a nice avenue. So then Krishna arranged, because that Brahmatitapru, he knew the person who was to give the you know, the confirmation. He knew his boss's boss's boss. Oh. So, like that very day. And he contacted them, and then I started getting emails. Oh, your thing is passed. Go and go serve your food, Haribol. So I feel like Krishna reciprocated, you know, and it's through his devotees that because there was this desire to have this program for Srila Prabhupada for Krishna, then Krishna arranged everything automatically. And in that sense, my passion was satisfied. Like, oh, okay. And then so many people, nice people came. It was very nice. So that was my goal.
I suggested to Shruti Sagar Prabhu that he get more information. So although he was angry, and I was angry too, I said, you know, before we get upset, let's find out what is the situation. And he did a very good job of controlling his trembling voice and asking questions of the person who had denied the permit. So that is a truism so often in life. You don't have information, and we get angry on some assumptions and make fools out of ourselves. So letting anger go is usually a really poor indulgence and ends up being a big mistake.
I'm not suggesting that everyone start using their passion and getting angry all the time and saying that I'm using for Krishna service. But, that's Kalakant person. Anger has to be, it shouldn't be let gone all of a sudden. And we can't imitate Srila Prabhupada, how he would, you know, sharply use anger in Krishna's service. And
There was a time in ISKCON when we had a group of young men who thought they were Kshatriyas. And they would wait at the Sunday feast for someone just to step out of place. If you stepped out of place, then they would just pounce on them, you know. So that's not a very good dovetailing. In other words, they were almost like praying for some prey. So we have to be careful what our desire is.
Yeah, I hope my message didn't come across as a negative one, that, oh, it's pound on people because you have anger and you want to use it for Krishna. There was a funny incident once on Harinam. There was a person, we were going on Harinam, and this one random person, he raised a fist. So a devotee who had heard that very morning that when someone does something to devotees, you should get angry. And he also raised his fist. So what happened, that other person got really angry and he started running after devotees and threatening us.
And he was six feet.
Yeah, he was this tall guy. What was it? What did they say? Veteran from Vietnam War and whatever. And then we had to call the cops.
How tall
I don't know his exact height. Maybe five something. So anyway, it was a funny incident. So yes, yeah. So again, there has to be a balance of vision that the devotee you should have strong discrimination when to use what. And Srila Prabhupada showed that so nicely. Whenever he would actually pick his battles. You know, he would always pick his battles. For a very interesting example is when he was in Vrindavan, he made sure that the installation of Krishna Balaram was done according to the methods of, you know, the Goswami methods of, you know, this whole extensive rituals and, you know, with gold plates and gold, these things, and with the Goswamis of the local Goswamis doing the whole thing in the front, and the, you know, the ISKCON devotees in the background. So he did that. So because he knew that if he'll do that, then people will recognize and they'll come more to the temple. He did that. Whereas in, I think it was in France, in New Mayapur, that and he just established for the establishment of deities, he said just do Sankirtan and Harinam. There were some rituals, but it wasn't as extensive as it was in Vrindavan. So he'd always pick and he'd always discriminate when to do what. So that's a balance. That was the whole point. That this is the balanced approach of a devotee, and a very good indication for to notice that it's that to catch your false ego that you are not doing it for Krishna is when you start becoming, there's too much grudge, like you become very grudging. If you become too much, you know, if you don't have gratitude in your heart while you're doing that service or whatever, if you become too grudging, then you should just stop and start thinking, oh, why am I doing this? What is this for? You know, why am I here? Why am I doing, is this for Krishna? Is it for me? And even just that thought, it will ease you off and hopefully some gratitude will come. Just that thought. You don't have to leave the service. But you should, it's very nice when you have something in the background that, oh, this is all about Krishna. And the reason I'm here is to serve. And yes, you know, and the reason I'm having some grudges is because, you know, just because I have some anarthas or whatever and it's coming out. So, like that. And I'll just stop here. And if there are any more comments or questions. Yes, Prabhu?
It's not really concerned with the class, but very much related with what Kalakandaru was saying, having the knowledge. So one day I was taking photographs, and there came a cop, and he said, you cannot take pictures of federal building. What? You cannot take pictures of federal building. And he was also suggesting of writing a citation or something. I said, can you show me that law? That there's a law like that, you cannot take picture of a federal building. So he said, yes, I can. And he went back and searched for like half an hour. I was sitting there waiting for him. And he came back with a pamphlet which said you cannot take pictures with animals, laboratory animals. So I was saying, you're trying to write a citation and you also do not know the law. So he went backfoot. He was not able to really, initially he was aggressive, but then he went backfoot. Just because I had seen some YouTube videos which said that, no, you are allowed to take pictures of federal building. So, yeah, it's good to have knowledge, information. As Kalakandaru was saying, not to make a fool of yourself before engaging in something.
Yes. Oh, yes, Shyamalapur. Yeah, go ahead.
When you said the story about the guy that was on Harinam that, you know, he got angry. So I was thinking of another story that happened to my father. The early days, probably the 70s, they used to do Harinam every day. And there was this guy who started really harassing the devotees every time they would come. He would get really angry and was like, why are you here? Why, you know, go away, I hate you, whatever. So after a while, and they actually reacted to it in a very peaceful, nonviolent, you know, the devotees didn't react angrily or anything. They just eventually they just moved locations. They thought, okay, we'll leave him to his peace and we'll move. So they moved locations, and for a year they did it somewhere else. This was in Detroit. And then a year later, they went, the Harinam party, it was walking by the place where they used to do it. And this man was there, and he ran up to the devotees with tears in his eyes, and he was like, he started hugging the devotees, said, where were you? I was missing you so much. Like, I'm so sorry that you left. And like, so it was a transformation of his heart.